It's Ian Pickus, and we are back in the Congressional Corner today with New York Representative Josh Riley, a Democrat from the 19th District, and he's been in office since January. Congressman Riley, welcome back.
Hey, Ian. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So the other day I was talking to your colleague, Pat Ryan, who's a big Knicks fan, about the Knicks playoff run. What sports are you into?
Well, I've been watching the NBA playoffs. I'm going to try to catch the Knicks game one tonight. It'd be great to see them advance. There was, you know, the Patrick Ewing and John Starks years, and then a bunch of darkness. And now, hopefully a deep run here. My big thing is my 5-year-old son and I will go watch Cornell Athletics as much as we can. So we'll try to catch a hockey game once a month if we can. And we've been following Cornell's run in the playoffs. They're in the Final Four. And so that's been really, really exciting to watch.
You know, I will forgive you for Cornell knocking out UAlbany in the first round of the men's lacrosse tournament. One hack.
It was a good start to the game, though. I mean, it got away from them, but the first quarter there, they hung with them for the first quarter.
No question. So here's a hack question for you. You're tall. Do you get asked about playing on congressional basketball teams?
Oh my God! So all the time, the main question I usually get is like, do I play basketball? Have I played basketball? And I played a bit, later in life, but my parents really messed up because what they should have done when it was clear at a young enough age that I was going to be tall, they should have had me playing basketball and swimming, and instead they signed me up for football and lacrosse, where I just got the hell kicked out of me for my whole life. So I should be I feel like in an alternative life, if my parents had done a better job, I should be riding the bench as like the 10th man for the Knicks, but instead here I am.
There you are in Congress, one of 435 instead. So, you know, as we're speaking, and I don't know when everybody will hear this, but the quote, big, beautiful bill is making its way through the House of Representatives. And, you know, there are a lot of incremental changes happening. But what can you tell us about your view of that 1,100-page bill?
Well, it's not a big, beautiful bill. It's a big pile of crap, especially as far as it goes for upstate New Yorkers. They're marking up this bill in the middle of the night. There's been a real lack of transparency where, as of a couple minutes ago before I jumped on with you, I'm not even sure if they released the final text of what they're trying to do. But from what we've seen, we know that it's really, really bad for upstate New York. It would cut healthcare to the bone for folks who really need it. The Medicaid cuts would have a devastating impact for our rural hospitals. About 30% of the folks in our district are on Medicaid. 40% of the kids, half the babies, about 70% of seniors in nursing homes are on Medicaid. And they would just have the rug pulled out from under them. This would be the biggest cut to healthcare, I think, in the history of the country. And I think it's really important to remember that the cuts to Medicaid don't just impact people on Medicaid. It's going to result in massive increases in healthcare costs and premiums for the middle class, because all of those uncovered expenses are then going to fall to everybody else. I'm on the Agriculture Committee, and we're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars in cuts to nutrition assistance. Again, that not only impacts about a third of the folks across our district directly, but it's also going to be devastating for our farmers who provide the food that go into that program. And all of those cuts that are hurting upstate New Yorkers, the reason they're doing all of it is to cut taxes for billionaires. And we're not speculating about this. The Congressional Budget Office last night put out a report. It's a nonpartisan objective analysis, and it showed clear as day that the impact from this bill would be to improve and increase the incomes of the top 10% and decrease the incomes of the bottom 10%. I mean, it's just absolutely gross that they are taking from people who are hurting the most and giving it to people who need it the least. It's just not the way we operate in upstate New York. We take care of each other. But, you know, Washington is corrupt as hell, and all the special interests and lobbyists roll in and want their tax cuts at the expense of our constituents. So I'm going to vote against it.
What would you say to the argument that, you know, Republicans won control of both houses of the Congress and the White House, and they had sort of run on a radical realignment of, you know, social programs, a social safety net, and this is what it looks like?
That may or may not be right. I know I ran on improving people's lives so that when they sit down at the kitchen table and try to balance their budget, it's just a little bit easier for them. And I won my race based on that commitment. And that's what I'm working to do. You know, I mean, my stories from growing up and the conversations we had at the kitchen table where, you know, the plants were closing, the economy was crumbling around us, and just listening to my parents talk about how they were going to afford the future and budgeting for the layaway payments at Kmart. There was a student who visited, we had a class from Ichabod Crane came to visit me in Washington a couple months ago. And one of the students was telling me that the conversations at the dinner table now with her family, they've had a dairy farm in the family for generations. And now they're talking about, you know, they may have to sell it because they're just, you know, hanging on by a thread and the costs are too high. And the markets are too uncertain. And so I'm so much less focused on what the big national political dynamics are and who's up and who's down in Washington. I'm just going to stay really, really focused on what's good for upstate New York. And I'll tell you, this big, beautiful pile of crap bill is not good for us.
Do you have any hope that some of the rougher edges, as you see it, of the bill will be pared back in some way when it goes to the Senate, which obviously has different margins and different rules?
You know, I'm hopeful. I'm always hopeful. You kind of have to be. I think in this business, I've been here for 4 months and the place hasn't crushed my soul yet. So I'm hopeful.
Well, that's good.
That this will get, yeah. You kind of have to be. I'm hopeful that this thing will get fixed. I've been encouraged, frankly, by some of the voices from folks you might not always expect, like, you know, the Josh Hawleys of the world on the Republican side in the Senate, who have said, I think correctly, that the cuts to health care that are in this bill are really damaging to the working class. Like, you can't say that you're the party that's fighting for the working class and then turn around and stab the working class in the back. And that's exactly what this bill does. And I think it's just plain as day. I mean, look, even the president, I don't agree with the president on most things, but even the president over the last month, you've seen him say things like, you know, guys, one of the ways we could pay for this is by lowering prescription drug costs and negotiating prescription drug costs. And then what happened was the pharmaceutical industry, they lawyered up, they lobbied up, they sent in all their money and their people and killed that as a proposal. I mean, that is something that we could have gotten bipartisan support. That's something where I agree with the president, and they won't do it because this place is a swamp and it's corrupt. The president said a couple weeks ago that, you know, one of the ways that we can do this is to close the carried interest loophole. And that's something I would certainly want to work on. And I would definitely agree on that with him. And then what happened was all the Wall Street lobbyists and super PACs came in and bullied everybody, and it got taken off the table. And so I do have some hope because I have seen some things said by some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that indicate to me that there's places where we could actually do a really good bipartisan bill that actually delivers tax cuts to the middle class, which is what we should be doing, not giving tax cuts to billionaires at the expense of the most vulnerable of our neighbors.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, because the other day when President Trump went to Capitol Hill, according to some reporting, he told the GOP conference to leave Medicaid alone, yet the bill is very much predicated on cutting there to reallocate elsewhere. So I don't know how he's going to square that circle.
Yeah, and you know, the math is just the math. I mean, it's right there for the American people. A lot of this process has not been as transparent as I would want it to be. I mean, having having hearings in the middle of the night where you're not even showing your work to the American people is just outrageous. And I think if the Democrats were doing that, I'd be the first one to say we should not be doing it this way. The Republicans are doing it. They should not be doing it that way. But the one piece of transparent, clear, objective data that we have is that the benefits of this bill are going to go to the top 10%, and the harms caused by this bill are going to be inflicted on the bottom 10%. And that is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing.
So, Congressman Riley, there was all this talk and polling about President Trump's first 100 days, which we just passed. You're also in your first 100 days, as I said. How would you grade yourself so far?
I think so I'm not going to grade myself. What I would ask is, how do my constituents grade the work that I'm doing? And, you know, a district that's like this, where it's very evenly divided, one of the most competitive districts in the whole country, about a third Democrats, a third Republicans, a third independents, I'm not going to make everybody happy all the time. If I was making somebody happy all the time, I probably wouldn't be doing my job very well. I've even had my mom tell me that she's taken issue with some of my votes.
On what?
I can't remember exactly. There were a couple. One of the things that my mom is really pushing for is no tax on tips. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a provision that's in the reconciliation bill. And it's something that I frankly agree with. I think there's some stuff in this reconciliation bill that would be good if it was pulled out of the massive mess that it's in. One of her big priorities is no tax on tips. After she retired as a probation officer with Tioga County, she started picking up shifts with Instacart. And she does that to make a little extra money and get out of the house. And so that's been her big thing. And I think we both agree on the premise, no tax on tips, but I think we have very serious disagreements on the political way to accomplish it. So my point is just, you know, you're not going to, in a district like this, you're not going to make everybody happy all the time. But I have been really proud of the work we have done that is really improving folks' lives across the district. The thing I'm probably the most proud of is the constituent service operation that we've already built. We've opened hundreds of cases for folks across the district. We've resolved a lot of those cases. One of the things that's most rewarding to me is having a call with a constituent who came to us with a real problem, whether it was an issue with the bureaucracy, and we've been able to navigate that for them. For your listeners out there, if you have issues with the federal government, call my office. We're doing mobile office hours all over the district. It's been a real point of emphasis for us, and I think we're doing a really good job with it. The stuff that I've been focused on during my time in Washington, it's always based on the conversations I'm having with folks at home. So a gentleman pulled me aside at a craft fair in Delaware County a few months to tell me he's on a fixed income and the utility bills are too high and that's really squeezing his family. And so I've introduced legislation to help lower utility costs. I've launched investigations into the utility monopolies. I had a single dad on St. Patrick's Day at a bar in East Durham tell me that he was cutting back on the groceries because he had to pay for the school clothes for his daughter. So I have legislation to lower the price of eggs. And I'm really proud that I was able to bring together, as a freshman in the minority, I brought together members of the Progressive Caucus with the head of the Freedom Caucus, which is to the far right. I was able to build a coalition to lower grocery prices. Whole host of legislation and bills like that that are based on the conversations I've had at home and trying to bring those upstate New York priorities and values to Washington. One other one that I did, last one that I'll mention to you, is I have a bipartisan bill to help detect fentanyl. Especially as it's getting into prisons, because I've heard from so many corrections officers that the fentanyl smuggling is getting out of hand. And so that would make a real difference in those folks' lives. And that's the sort of work I'm focused on. And I think I'll leave it to my constituents to do the grading.
Well, I'm going to follow up with a lot of those issues. But in the meantime, as you say, it is ultimately up to the constituents. You've actually raised a ton of money for your reelection bid already. So are you definitely planning on running again next year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it. And my hope is that we will run I want to run a positive campaign that's based on me coming to my voters and showing the ways that they have told me about the challenges they're facing and the ways that I've fought like hell to make their lives better and to address those. And so, I'm definitely going to run again.
So let me follow up on this NYSEG probe. What are you trying to find out? And I should say, NYSEG has said, you know, it was a colder than normal winter and costs have gone up, and that's to blame for this issue you've identified. So I take it you don't buy that.
Well, we launched the investigation and I want to follow the facts. And if it turns out that NYSEG, or, you know, I'm also involved in the Central Hudson rate case, mm-hmm. if it turns out that they have good arguments that are supported by the facts and the data, then so be it. But what I've seen so far is that that's not the case. Fundamentally, what we have here with the utility companies is that they are owned by massive foreign corporations. So in the case of Central Hudson, it's Fortis. In the case of NYSEG, it's Iberdrola. And those foreign corporations don't care at all about upstate New Yorkers and don't care at all about pocketbooks of folks across upstate New York. What they care about is squeezing as much cash out of us as they possibly can so that they can feed their shareholders. And we're in a situation where these foreign-owned utility companies are coming to the regulators, coming to the customers and saying, hey guys, we're so poor, we need more money from you so that we can just do the basic stuff, and begging for rate hikes that are crushing my constituents across upstate New York. And then literally in some cases, within days of that, these big foreign corporations are bragging to Wall Street about how they're swimming in cash. And so they're either not being truthful with the regulators when they say they're in dire economic straits, or they're not being truthful with investors when they say that they're swimming in cash. And so we're trying to get to the bottom of that, and I'm trying to understand through a whole bunch of different things we're doing in the investigation, trying to understand what's driving the rate increases. I'll say to listeners, to folks who are listening, if you've had issues with your utility bills, we have a survey on our website, on my House of Representatives website. You can go in, you can share your story. I'm collecting all of those. We're reviewing those. Within the first 48 hours of launching our investigation, we had thousands of people reach out to our office and tell me that their utility bills were spiking for what seems like no good reason.
I want to follow up on something you mentioned, which is this bill aimed at keeping fentanyl out of the prisons. And earlier in this year, you were weighing in on the Wildcat prison strike that lasted for several weeks across New York State. You called on the state legislature to make changes to the HALT Act. Ultimately, there was an agreement and they went back to work, although many were then banned from state service, the corrections officers. So with a few weeks of hindsight, what are your feelings today about the resolution to that strike and where we are now?
Yeah, I don't think it's satisfactory, and I don't think the current situation is tenable. The final resolution basically said that the parties would all kind of get together and try to continue working on a resolution, but we're not there yet. I'm in touch very frequently, probably weekly, with corrections officers across the district, and what I'm hearing is that the rates of violence have skyrocketed in the prisons. And that's not just anecdotal. That's just backed up by the data. We've seen about 170% increase in violence in the prisons. I'm hearing from folks who, you know, one of the things that happens is people will douse paper in illicit substances and then smuggle them into the prisons by putting, you know, the name of a law firm or something like that on it so that it can get in. And it's just an incredibly dangerous job. The folks who are doing it are overworked. They're underpaid. All they want is to be treated fairly and get home to their families. And we're in a situation where policies that have come out of Albany and New York City, frankly, are just not serving those folks well. And so my bill intends to address part of that. What I did was I'm on the Science and Technology Committee. And so we have jurisdiction over the national labs, and the national labs have some of the most brilliant scientists in the world there. And what we basically said in our bipartisan bill is, please go to work trying to figure out ways to detect fentanyl vapors so that whether it's coming across the border or being smuggled into the jails, we can detect it and stop it from coming in.
Congressman Riley, I wanted to ask you about the president's aggressive tariff regime. Obviously, local manufacturing is of interest to you, but do you think that these tariffs are having, will have the desired effect?
You know, I don't. I think the president's approach to this is the wrong answer to the right question. And I give him credit for asking the right question, which is why have our trade deals and trade policies been so bad for so long? You look across upstate New York and you see the impacts of it. Tens of thousands of jobs that were shipped overseas to China or shipped to Mexico, where, you know, where we're just not able to compete on a level playing field. And all of that was done so that Wall Street could be better off. And we saw it, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, my upbringing and my hometown where the IBM plants closed down, everybody in the neighborhood, family, friends, lost jobs. We saw the child poverty rate skyrocket. We saw the opioid epidemic rip through. And meanwhile, Wall Street was going gangbusters. And we're now in a situation where the middle class has been completely hollowed out. The top 1% in this country have more wealth than the entire middle class combined. And a lot of that is because we allowed globalization to just run unchecked. And so I'll work with anybody, Democrat or Republican, who wants to fix that and the bad trade deals and get it right. On the particular policies, though, that this administration has put forward, it's not the right answer to it for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's just it's way too broad-based and not targeted enough. And one of the impacts that that's having is it's jacking up the cost for farmers across upstate New York. You know, we shouldn't be slapping massive tariffs on Canadian, our relationship with Canada, where we need fertilizer, for example, for our farmers to succeed. We should, though, have reasonable and targeted and, frankly, I think aggressive tariffs on China when it comes to things like solar panels and batteries and other critical things that we should be making in America, both to rebuild the middle class and protect national security. And so my hope would be to see a more targeted approach to this and provide a little bit more consistency and predictability for small businesses and for farmers.
You know, one industry that has got a foothold here in upstate New York now is semiconductors, chips, nanotechnology, high-tech industry. And, you know, the state and the federal government, at least in the last administration, made a real bet on these industries. However, the Republicans have talked about getting rid of the CHIPS and Science Act. So do you see a discrepancy there between the impulse to return manufacturing back to upstate New York, but also at the same time to get rid of a bill that seems to be doing that?
Yeah, and over my dead body, are they going to pull the CHIPS and Science Act? We have had the rug pulled out from us in upstate New York when it comes to manufacturing over and over and over again. And right now, we are on the cusp of getting back to doing what we do best, which is making things the world needs to meet its biggest challenges. I mean, we had, you've heard me say this a million times, in my hometown, Endicott Johnson. I'm sitting in my office in Washington right now, and I've got a pair of, I've got a couple pairs of EJ boots on the table that were worn by soldiers in the World Wars, and we made those in upstate New York. And IBM brought the world a technology revolution. We did that. We made that in upstate New York, and now the future is, you know, is it going to be semiconductors and energy storage and aerospace? And we are on the cusp of being able to do all of that stuff in upstate New York and not just make the things that are going to save the world, but also rebuild the middle class so that folks can afford to live in the community and raise their families in the community. And so for the president to come in during the State of the Union a couple of months ago and say that he wanted to kill the CHIPS and Science Act, and for a bunch of politicians around Washington to go along with that, I have used my seat on the Science and Technology Committee to fight against that. I've introduced bipartisan legislation to make sure that we're actually doubling down on shifts in science investments and not undermining those. And over my dead body, I'm going to let these guys come in and pull the rug out from under upstate manufacturing again.
I want to ask you about immigration while we're talking. You know, you ran on that issue. You ran on the fact that you thought President Biden's administration had done, frankly, a rotten job on the southern border. Now we're in the second Trump administration, and the crackdowns have been nationwide. You know, we're seeing college students who maybe went to a protest or wrote an op-ed kind of rounded up. Do you think that the new administration is going too far in the other direction?
Yeah, the Biden administration was a disaster on immigration, and the Trump administration is turning out to be a disaster on immigration. At some point, the politicians in Washington need to stop politicizing this issue and treating it like a political football, and just have some common sense people get together and fix the problem. And the thing that's so frustrating about it is I actually think there's a handful of us who are in Congress who see this not as a Republican issue or a Democratic issue, but just as an issue that we've got to solve. And I don't see why it's that complicated. Like, we should just secure the border, make sure that there's processes for people who are coming to the country so that folks who are here for the right reasons can wait their turn in line and be here to contribute to the economy and chase the American dream. People who would do harm should not be allowed in the country, and if they get into the country, they should be deported. And all of that, to me, seems pretty simple. And to most of the folks I talk to across upstate New York, it seems pretty simple. But for some God knows what reason in Washington, this has become an intractable political problem that the politicians can't solve. One of the things that I'm most concerned about, I will tell you, I spend a lot of my time talking to farmers across upstate New York, dairy farmers especially, and they're really worried about the labor that's needed to run the dairy farms. And this is an example of just how stupid this the politics are around this. We have visa programs in this country where farm workers can come and work on the farms on a seasonal basis. That makes sense if you're, you know, picking apples. Because that's seasonal. But we don't have a program that allows folks to come and work on the dairy farms year-round, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because the cows are not Democratic cows or Republican cows. They're just cows that need to be milked, and they have to be milked all day, every day, all year. And our immigration system is so broken that we haven't even figured out the basics like that. And so I would say I'm probably just about as frustrated with the status of the way the politicians are handling immigration today as I was during the campaign.
Well, we're very grateful for all of your time, New York Congressman Josh Riley. He's a Democrat from the 19th District, and he is in his first term. Congressman Riley, we look forward to future conversations with you, and thank you for spending this time with us and our listeners.
Always happy to do it. Thanks, Ian. I appreciate it very much.